Hello, fellow changemakers. I want to invite you for a special episode today. As I am researching and writing my book, Leadership Beyond Gender in a Messed Up World. And today I'm really honored to invite you to listen to a man that I met in one of those conferences that I love to attend, conferences where people around the world are coming together and looking at how can we make this world a better world? How can we create more inclusive leadership? How can we bring in diverse knowledge and skills and people's passions and values, which is really what I'm all about, and I'm looking at in the book, how do we do that? So my guest today is located in Switzerland, but I know that is not where he's been all his life, because Mahmut Samandari, am I saying your last name right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, thank you. He is an embodiment of passion for innovation that transcends boundaries. He's a serial entrepreneur with a global footprint. He has ignited change in three continents, spearheading ventures across diverse sectors, from education to IT to communications. I know that Mahmut's passion extends far beyond his entrepreneurial endeavors. He's a firm believer in sharing knowledge and has actively engaged in mentoring, coaching, training, and consulting. Now, he's a founding member and secretary general of the Global Governance Forum, and he is steering conversation on global scale towards holistic progress. He's co-founding role and EBBF, which stands for Ethical Business Building for the Future, speaks volumes about his desire to foster unity, spirituality, and constructive dialogue in pursuing a just, sustainable, and prosperous civilization, which is really what, as you know, is what I am about as well. Now, I am really excited to dwell into Mahmut's wisdom because there is something about having a conversation with him ever since I basically met him. Every time we speak, there is something fruitful that comes out of it. So I want to welcome you, Mahmut, to the Changemakers podcast in the Leadership Beyond Gender series.
Thank you, Rina. It's really not only a pleasure, but an honor to be here. We've had some conversations since that conference, WIN conference in Geneva. And I've been very much inspired by our conversations, by what you do, what you stand for. And really, if I'm looking also forward to this conversation as a learning opportunity so that consciousness grows globally.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for that. I want to start by asking you a question that I have asked every guest in this series, and that is a simple yet very complicated question. When you hear leadership beyond genders, what does that mean for you?
Well, because there are two words in the 3 words in this concept, I would just have a small reflection about leadership. There is a lot that has been written and said about leadership, different forms of leadership, and at least in my mind, the way I see it, the way I have practiced it in my own companies and in the organizations I've been involved with, etc., I have basically thought that participative leadership is the model that I am comfortable with, and I believe the world also needs that. In other words, not a leadership where you have one boss on the top and who's supposed to know things or supposed to tell others what to do, but a process through which, with consultation and conversations, the ideas that are supposed to lead us emerge. So leadership is not so much about one person. Leadership is about how do we make ideas emerge that leads the group, leads the organization, leads the association, leads the country, if we want to apply it at the political level. So if we think about this type of leadership, this definition of leadership, then because it is participative, it requires universal participation.
Mm-hmm.
And universal participation means that any, and I'm going to use a word I learned from you, any boxes are not welcome.
Yeah.
Universal participation means that we need 100% of humanity to bring their capacity, to bring their knowledge, to bring their experience, to bring their intuition into the process of leadership. So there is no way that a leadership that is meaningful for the world today can be gender-based.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with you. Do you believe in the black and white world that we tend to hear at least a lot about and experience a lot of the diverse, I mean, the gap that we're constantly seeing in the world? Do you think it's possible for us to create a culture where, like you said, 100% we're tapping 100% into people's potential?
You know, it's interesting. From a physics perspective, black is no color and white is all colors combined.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no black, no white anywhere in the world, nor in the relationship among human beings. We are all a combination of all those colors, which means all of them must be present, even if we want to get white. And if we want to get black, none of them should be present. So I do not see black and white, because there is no way that you can see everything or nothing at all. So based on this consideration, I would say that we are living a world in which everything is present. The question is, are we using the contribution of everyone? Are we using the capacities and the talents of everyone? And no, we are not. And therefore, the purpose, the objective, the direction becomes clear.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use everybody's capacities. Now, this using everybody's capacities require at least an effort, a voluntary effort to build capacity. And building capacity requires first to be convinced that every single human being is a noble creature. Based on that conviction, then the work that we need to do is to make sure that those capacities that are inherent in all of us find a way to express themselves. So as an individual, I feel my duty to be able to express my own capacities, but also to create conditions for others to do that. And if I'm sitting on an institution of whatever type, be it on the management of a company or in the political realm, it is my duty to make sure that I create the conditions and the spaces in which everybody's capacity can be developed.
Yeah.
So I look at it from this perspective that, yes, there are different grades that we see. There is more or less equality. There is more or less diversity, there is more or less respectful relationship, but it is all there. And because it can, you can find it in smaller measures, it means you can make it happen in larger measures.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. Your story, Mahmoud, I mean, can you share with us, how did you come to this place in your life? Having this wisdom, being able to share it the way you share it. I mean, it sounds like you've gone through a journey. Can you share something with us? What you have in your lifetime, what have you really been the stepping stones that have got you to this conclusion?
On the gender issue, there are two things that have absolutely influenced my understanding, my reading, my attitude towards the world. One of them definitely is my mother and her mother and my father's mother. I have been blessed by having extraordinary women around me that have really made me realize that capacity has nothing to do with gender. Capacity has to do with the fact that we have it. Our soul doesn't have a gender either. So the question of man and woman, it was relatively secondary. I was not blind. I was seeing the reality. I was seeing the discrimination. I was raised and born until I was born and raised until I was 18 in Iran. That was not the most egalitarian society. Even though at that time, before the revolution, the situation was much better than now, as far as gender is concerned. But still, so I believe the example that I had around me was absolutely fundamental in my upbringing. The other element, which is as much connected to the first one, is my faith. I'm a Baha'i by faith, and the principle of equality of rights between men and women is one of the fundamental principles of the Baha'i faith. So I was born with it. In a way, you can say it was transmitted to me by milk from my mother.
That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. Now, I want to go into fostering innovation and mentorship, which you've done quite a bit, and you've been working in various continents. In your journey of fostering innovation and mentorship across continents, what experiences have most influenced you?
I will come back to it, but I would be it would be unfair if I do not mention that this experience of having special women in my life has not gone also to the experience that I have had in 46 years of beautiful marriage with my wife that has continued that, with my daughter, and now my two granddaughters. All of these women around me have made me not only conscious, convinced that the future of the world absolutely needs them, needs women, probably even more than before, because they were not given the opportunities to contribute to the well-being of humanity. But now, coming to the innovation question, what I have learned from that is that, again, for something to flourish and develop, conditions must be created. If I take the conditions of my life, and again, to go back to my family, my father was an entrepreneur. He always had his own activities, and he was and is an inspiration to me. I used to say that, you know, even though I have some formal education, my real education is that I have a business degree from my father and a human relations degree from my mother. So he was my example. I from the age of 12, 13, I started to work in the family business, which was a travel agency. So I had to learn all the rules, all the knowledge of that industry. And it created also in me the curiosity to learn about more. So I think one of the things that is fundamental for innovation is the question of curiosity. I was always interested, and therefore I think altogether I have done 6, 7, 8 fields in which I have started companies and been active in. On the mentorship, I think also the example comes again. Somebody will tell you this is all about the family story, but it is true. Both my parents put a lot of confidence in me. They trusted me. They actually, when I was 15, We had a travel agency, and we had to organize a 1 month trip of a tour to two countries, and they put me to be the travel guide for 40 grown-ups for 30 days in two different countries, visiting six different cities.
Wow.
And just because they say, go ahead, you can do it, I had to find the way of learning how to do it. I think mentorship or coaching or accompaniment or whatever starts with the fact that we make sure that the person we are working with is aware of his or her capacity. That, I believe, is the first step for mentoring someone, for coaching someone, for accompanying and helping someone. So that is probably, and I have seen it in the course of my life, I have seen it in companies where, in one case, I had a company that manufactured parabolic antennas, you know, satellite dishes, those huge
yeah.
stuff, 50,000 kilos in weight. And in that factory, I had a guy who came in. He said, give me a job, even as a messenger, even though I do industrial drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Came as a messenger. Short story, 5 years later, he was the head of the production department because he had the capacity to do it. So really giving this possibility for people to demonstrate and use their talents, I think, is fundamental, especially in a world like ours, where change is happening so rapidly that the knowledge of a field becomes secondary to the capacity of learning new things.
Yeah.
So this mentoring or this coaching, etc., is all about developing the capacity in others to be curious, start to learn, and be given the opportunity to practice their learning.
Yeah, it's like a cycle to coach someone so that they understand and realize their capacity to coach or mentor another one.
Yes.
Just that they do have a value. It's not only opening up for creating space, what you said earlier, for people to express their value and be in their zone, but also for people in general to know what is my value, which I think is often we feel it's not very obvious what is our value, but other people can often see our value. We can't. I love what Nick always talks about, the butterfly looks down and just sees a big fat brown belly with hair and doesn't realize that the wings are beautiful and they have all that color.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it goes a similar thing for us, the human beings. Yeah. Thank you for expressing that. You've done an amazing job and I know that you're really passionate about sustainability and prosperous civilization, which in my mind really has to do with that we tap more into people's abilities to thrive. How do you see that we can best nurture environment where leadership excels? That and what I'm trying to say, how do we create a culture where, rather than this, we continue to assume that a person has something because the person looks a certain way, is whatever that is, if that is gender, race, religion, whatever it is. But we go further, we go deeper, we go and we value people from their passions, from their own values, from their skill sets, from their experience. And you, how do we do that in your mind?
You know, for this, I am going to use what we have learned at soul.com, because in soul.com, what I feel that we have done is to take those experiences into something a little bit more structured that can that we can look at the different steps of it in a systemic way.
Yeah.
I feel that the first step in order to create those conditions is to create trust within the group, whatever that community is, whether it's a couple as a family, whether it's five members of the family with children, whether it's a company, whether it's a city, whether it's a country, or whether it's the whole globe.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for trust, a number of things are required. The capacity to listen is fundamental to generate trust. The capacity to think in terms of community, not in terms of an individual. The capacity to actually reflect and the capacity to have meaningful conversations. So I think the very first step is that. So if I want to bring change about around me, first thing I will look and see who else is in my little group. It could be a core group of 2-3 people only. And then start to say, you know, if I want to create trust, I cannot expect others to be trustworthy. I can only be myself trustworthy and trusting. If I don't do those two things, there is no way I can build and generate trust among me, among our group. The other day, we were having a conversation with our friends in South Africa about precisely the topic of trust.
Yeah.
And everything was mostly about the lack of trust, you know, corruption and this and that, how easy it is to bring up corruption anywhere in the world, because no matter where you say it, you are right. But then we asked ourselves, okay, are we trusting our government so that they try to deserve it?
Mm-hmm.
Our point of departure, our assumption, our default is that government cannot be trusted. Mm-hmm. And it's not only about the third world. If you think even the foundations of democracy is on lack of trust, why did we create three powers and we put them in competition with one another? Because we didn't trust the ruler. Yeah. When we got rid of the king, what did we say? We're going to replace it by three different powers, and we are going to create a balance of powers so that those three never allow another to exaggerate.
Mm-hmm.
Then what does that mean? We created it based on an assumption of lack of trust. So the first thing I would do if I wanted to create a different reality in my community, whatever the size of it, is myself try to be trustworthy and start trusting others. So trusting others must become our default the same way as the presumption of innocence. People are trustworthy until the contrary is proven, not the other way around. And the presumption of innocence is in the law.
Yeah.
The second step is myself actually become trustworthy. And everything that I decide that are conditions for me to be trustworthy is only for me to act, not for me to judge others. So if I say trustworthiness means that I do what I say and I say what I do, this formula is only good for me to apply to myself. I cannot say, now I'm going to apply it to Runa, and if what she says is not what she does, I don't trust her. This is not a rule to judge others. This is a principle to apply to myself. And then I need, in order to be able to bring transformation around us, I need hope. Because probably this is one of the things that is the major impediment to action today.
Mm.
Impediment to action, because when there is no hope, you try to bring in control and command. And when bring about control and command, you do not allow people to express their innovative capacity. And when they cannot innovate their capacity, they cannot express their innovative capacity, their own hope goes down. And this becomes a vicious circle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, The difference between a vicious circle and the virtuous one is only changing a minus to a plus.
Okay.
So when you have less hope and more command, have more hope, you will do less command and control. And when you do less command and control, people will exercise their capacity and their innovation more often. And when they do that, even if they fail half of the time, the other time they have something that gives them hope and gives you hope, and therefore you trust them more. So this virtuous circle of hope, allowing expressions of capacity, is the second step that I see necessary for a transformation.
Yeah.
This thing also requires one more step, and that requires to learn how to learn together. We have learned how to learn alone, even though at school I don't believe that's the ideal way of learning, but at least learning alone is something we do very often. But what does learning together mean? Learning together requires acting together. Acting together requires having or making decisions together. How do we do that? If we learn to bring trust into the conversation and meaningful conversation around it, we can come up with decisions on actions that allow us to learn together. These are the steps that I see, you know, the question of trust, the question of hope, the question of bringing about everybody's capacity. Just imagine for 1 second, in any environment that you are, think of it functioning like that.
Yeah.
And imagine the outcome.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Now I know that you are what you've been doing, training and the work that you've been doing around trust has been quite an impact. Can you share any stories or examples? What has changed an organization when they apply those three steps?
You see, the probably the first thing is the most intangible thing, but it changes the relationships.
Yeah.
You see, I'll give you one concrete example, but it's at the level of relationship.
Yeah.
We had a course for 45 executives of a telecom company in Latin America. The last course was in November, end of November. In January, we were doing the reflection with them. These were middle managers of a large telecom operator with 4,000 employees. And we asked them, what was your experience with what you learned at the course? And almost all of them said, you know, the two things of I have to listen rather than giving speeches to my people. Leading does not mean telling them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Leading is also how to listen. And the capacity to generate an environment of trust so that they can speak up. They said at the end of the year, in our department session in December, usually the model was, I would give a pep talk. I would talk about the good results that we've had. And as a result, I would ask for even 15%, 20% more for the next year's goal and say, go get it. Good luck for the next year. They said this year, we changed that totally. We did not give a talk at the company gathering in our department. We invited people to come up and just say what they wanted or they felt, what they thought. And they came up with new and interesting ideas.
Yeah.
That they themselves could put into practice. Because there is a difference between what people hear as a good idea in order to put into practice and what they discover in themselves.
Yeah.
And when you give this possibility to people of just listen and listening environment, discoveries come on their own. Now, we have not done any surveys of how much did it affect the bottom line. But the fact that everybody was participating in the process actually changed the work environment. And when we think of the world where 4 million people had the Great Resignation in the United States alone, when we see people are looking for meaningful work, when we see people are looking for meaning everywhere, it's in fact what we need to give them is the meaning.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have seen this happening time and time again.
That's beautiful, really beautiful. That opening up about the intelligence, the experience, the innovation, the creativity, just by asking one simple question: what do you see? It's beautiful. I have one final question, and that has to do with our legacy as people, as leaders, like leader. Well, that I call the concept being a leader beyond genders, meaning that you can lead yourself and guide others without just being super aware that your inner judgment that is just created by well, it's actually just created by people that are no longer here on this planet, so we can say that it's peer pressure from dead people, but that we can be so holistically who we were born to be and leave a legacy that really impacts our world, our inner and outer world. What do you see through all the work that you've done is the core thing that we keep in mind every single day as we head into a normal day?
What you said inspired a thought I had never had, and I'm not sure it's the answer to your question, but I want to share it with you. You see, I just came up with a different idea about leadership. The leader is probably the person in the community that should not be visible, and yet the impact should be there. Okay? Because it is what they impact on others that matters, not themselves. And if I translate that into genetics, you see, we are, as a species or any species, is the sum of gradual improvements that have happened over time. It is not who made the gradual improvement. It's the fact that it contributed to the pool of genes that we have, and therefore we are who we are. Should they be visible? Yes, I know that there are some leaders that nobody can forget, Mandela and Gandhi, etc., because of the impact that they left. But even when you talk about them, you immediately say what I said, because of the impact that they left.
The impact they left,
So, I don't know. I have to think more about this, but as it was just on the spur of the moment, I have to understand it myself better. But is it true that if you are the leader and you are invisible, it means you've done your job?
You're a leader and you're invisible. You have done your job. So it's really taking that old concept of like a pyramid structure, thinking. Not only, I mean, you're smashing that, you're also smashing the leader who listens and gives space for other people to grow, but you like taking that concept a little bit further. Not only does the leader listen to other people and give them space to grow, but he or she does that in a way that it's impactful, but doesn't necessarily have to do with his or her ego.
Visibility has to do with ego, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. There is something with my wife. We have decided we don't do that very often, but we decided to watch the Netflix series that is called Suits, mm-hmm. and it's about a law firm. I mean, law firms.
Yeah.
And at one point, somebody has to decide who to fire.
Yeah.
And one person does their typical analysis of the number of hours they have spent, number of cases they have worked on, their production and their efficiencies and all of that. And then this person says, such and such must go. Mm-hmm. Okay? And somebody says, think again. He says, yes, I have thought again. Mm. Everybody around him is more efficient than him. Everybody sitting physically around him is more efficient than him.
Yeah.
So he must go. The other person asks, well, would you be sure that the fact that he does less has nothing to do with the efficiency of the others? Mm-hmm. You see? Yeah. So this is a fact, you know, actually in one of our conversations at EBBF, about evaluation, somebody said what we are trying to implement in our company is this principle of evaluation of not, you know, annual review of the person's performance, is not to look at what the person did, you know, if it's a salesperson, how much they sold, et cetera, it's not how many courses they took, et cetera, but is to see what they have done for the others.
Yeah.
Imagine if in every single company, the criteria for evaluating somebody's work is how much did they contribute to the efficiency of others?
Wow. Yeah. Now, what would the impact be if we would measure it that way?
Well, it would be heaven in a sense. And I was talking to my granddaughters, and we actually did that physically for them to get this lesson. They say this guy died, he went to hell. He was expecting to see fire and suffering and everything. Mm-hmm. But no, he saw everybody sitting around the table, mm-hmm. full of food and everything fantastic to enjoy, but they were all sad. Mm-hmm. And the reason was that they couldn't bend their arms, okay? The arms were stretched out.
Yeah.
So they could take everything, but they couldn't put it in their mouth to eat.
Yeah.
Okay? So that was the source of suffering because everything was available, they couldn't benefit from it. At that moment, they call the guy and say, sorry, it was a mistake. You should have gone to heaven and not hell. So we are going to take you to heaven. He gets there. He sees the same table, the same food, and the same problem with people. But everybody was happy because each one was feeding the other one.
Yeah.
So the question is, what is our efficiency? What we are doing for ourselves or what we are doing for others to grow?
I love that. Oh, wow. This is so powerful. I'm going to end our conversation with exactly this for people to ponder on and look at how can you create a world where it's you value what is done for others and what you can do for others. Powerful stuff, Mahmud. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you. It has been a real pleasure to be inspired by you and have this conversation. Thank you.